Hello everyone, this is second attempt to start the non-intuitive beat podcast today, and it's as usually brought to you by Leaders Club that you're part two if you're listening to us, but do consider elevating your club membership by joining the Discord, and Discord channel link can be found in the description. And as usual, today with me in this virtual studio we have several folks. Dmitry Mananikov, do say hi to our listeners.
Hello.
And Nishant Sharma.
Hello.
And as usual, the most annoying sound that you will be hearing, it's my voice, Slava Kovalevsky. I think this is the first time all three of us in this season together. I don't think there was more than two people at any of the episodes.
I think so. I only did once with you. So.
You mean in this season?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Okay, we have tons of the interesting topic today that have happened, and for the warm-up, there is so many small things that I wanted to share with both of you folks, but does anyone have anything to share before we jump to the warm-up topics? Something small, interesting that have happened?
We have a list of books, I see. I can talk about one I found recently. It's called The Art of Thinking Clearly. It's very similar to famous Thinking Fast and Slow, but it's more on practical side. Essentially, it's like pretty small book. I don't know, maybe like 100-150 pages. And it's about different biases. And for each bias, it's like 2-3 pages. And then cross links between them. The author mentioned that he created this book as a, like, initially it started as a list of personal notes about his own biases. And then he organized and decided, okay, why not to make a book? So it's actually pretty cool. It's like a small pocket book that I can get back and to check, okay, is it something I have right now? Again, it's not really heavy on like science side and many things, you know, but it's nice to have this like well organized. So can recommend it, especially it's not really expensive.
And it has audio version, so if you want.
True. Not sure how audio version would be better, because again, it's really nice as a cooking book, you know, like, okay, what I have today, you can open it and see, but maybe audio as well.
Got it. And by the way, Nishant just mentioned that we have a blur video. Dmitry, would you also say that we have a blur video? This is just download speed on the Nishant side.
Do you mean on YouTube?
Or
on the screen that Slava is sharing, that panel specifically.
Oh yeah, that one is blurry.
Okay. I have no idea what YouTube folks are. But anyway, I abruptly ended the live stream and they have to find the second live stream. So there is a chance that no one will be listening live anyway. But who knows? We'll see how it will go. And honestly, I have no idea what to do about this. I have no clue how to fix that. Actually, let me quickly start to stop sharing and present again. Maybe somehow this will fix, but I don't think so.
Good old turn it off and
exactly, yes. Yes. Nope.
I think it's the same.
Jesus. Okay. Then I don't know what to do about it. We will have just to live with it. Honestly, I don't know how it looks on the YouTube. Maybe I will double check, but I'm pretty sure it will be the same Blu-ray there. I guess. Now I just have to do it. Okay, so anything else about this book, my friend? Because I actually also have a book to share since we are book sharing, in a book sharing mood.
No, I'm halfway through this book. Again, I just wanted... It was something that I searched for a long time. I found... whoever wants to read just need to read annotations and to see if it's something. I can't really say it's a great book. It's like practical.
It's reasonable. Okay, I just checked the YouTube. It's fine. It's not blurry there. So whatever Meets is doing, it's doing the shitty job. But yes, it's reasonable on the YouTube. Okay, so coming back to the book topics, then let me also share one. And that would be, I'm quickly searching the notes. I have no idea where I put it. Okay, I cannot find it in the show notes, so let me just find it live. And what is our problem? This is a book that I start reading. I haven't finished it. So there is this famous guy, Weight by Y, Tim Urban, that have a blog post. He got famous about many, many different techniques on how to be more productive, how to fight procrastination. He has a famous blog, Weight by But Why. Where he showcasing tons of the interesting topics in a really deep way in a really nice cartoon-ish. He did a famous TED talk about Procrastination Monkey that I highly would recommend everyone to watch if you have not. And recently he have released the book. Actually, I don't know how recently. I learned about it recently, but maybe it was not that recently. Oh, I don't know when he released it, but the point is, the book is there, and maybe I'm just slowpoke, and maybe you are as well if you haven't heard about it.
What is the problem?
So let me give you the small spoiler. It's really small because it's in the beginning of the book, you can kind of then read the rest of yourself, but it's a really small starting point. So he liked to visualize everything. So when he starts the book, he's visualizing the problem in the following way. Imagine that the history of the humanity is a book. All the known humanity and everything that humanity did is just one big book. And in reality, everything that you know about the humanity and humanity as you know it is just the last one page. The previous 999 pages is what have happened before the US or what we considering the modern civilization. And you can take person from any of these previous 999 pages and put the same person on any other page and the person would be comfortable. Nothing have changed really. It doesn't matter whether you're moving this person several pages forward or backward, the person will see the exactly same things around that he or she can adopt to. But if you take the person from previous 999 pages to the last page, the person will not survive because everything have changed drastically. And this is mostly because of the exponential growth of the technology. And now the final touch to that. Exponential growth makes everything bigger. So we have bigger good things and we have much bigger worse things. The wars and, you know, we just crossed 8 billion population on our planet and then going to cross 9 billion population. Everything have happened on the last page that we are actually part of it right now. So it doesn't take much to figure out where we're going from here and how fast we probably will get there. It's just a question how fast we'll get to this, doomsday, if you want, or something like that. So this is the premises. You will read this on the first 20 pages or so, and the rest of the book is answered to this question. What is our problem?
But does it provide any solution?
I will let you know when I finish reading it.
So I'm not asking what is the solution, but if it's not there, it seems like a very sad book.
To be fair,
I was gonna say maybe the answer is not the doomsday. Maybe the answer is we need to start expanding to Mars sooner. You know.
Yep. To be fair, if we as a humanity would only kill one planet, I would be considering this underachievement of our abilities. We are capable of killing and messing up way more planet than just one. But yes, to be fair. Even though I haven't read the book yet, I read several essays on this topic, and they are completely different from different angles, from different way of solving that. But unfortunately, almost everything that I ever read about these specific philosophical topics results in the conclusion that we need to have some type of force that will unite humanity in one solution that can be implemented. And that is effectively
famous nice dictator who will solve all our problems.
And feels like this is an unfortunate reality where we either will die or we have to, like, imagine this future where US suddenly realizing that we have 1 month left unless in 1 month we will do something, we will reach a point of no returns. And then the only way to actually enforce that something that needs to be done, but this is the starting of dictatorship and there will be no way back. And it's sad, but I don't know. I'm sure I will not survive until that day comes, but good luck to everyone after me. Anyway, any thoughts?
Not directly related to the book, but it did remind me, the whole conversation about Mars reminded me that if you sign up for Starlink, there is a clause in their terms of conditions that basically says users must agree that Mars is a free planet, unbound by the authority or sovereignty of any earthbound government.
This is hilarious.
It actually would be cool to see like real, you know, court case when like judge declining someone to have a rights on Mars because they actually bought a Starlink 20 years ago or something.
You know, I have this repo. I need to find it quickly. Jesus, I don't remember the name of this repo. But it's a license on one of my repositories on GitHub. I wrote the license that says that if I have not put a license to any of my code, this is the license, and explicitly says that US government can use my code for any reasons, and no one who forks it can forbid the US government to use it for any reasons. Yeah, I can quickly find it, but yes. Anyway.
Like a small story of space and books. I think it was a three-body problem book. There was like a short story that someone gifted a distant star to a girl, just as a, you know, like a certificate or something. But after many, many years, people actually start to considering moving to stars. And he sold this like for like, or she sold it for a lot of money because like people actually wanted like legal binding.
Man, just to keep going on that front, and there is this show on TV, Apple TV Plus, tomorrow, and this is a show, Hello Tomorrow, if you have watched Morning Show, it has one of the star of the Morning Show from Apple TV Plus who is there, and the whole idea of that is they are selling houses on the moon, and the people who are selling houses on the moon, they are in this retro-futuristic world. If you played Fallout, they clearly built a universe around the Fallout. They could have done an amazing job, but they did a really shitty TV series. I wouldn't recommend anyone to watching it just for the sake of your sanity. Horrible things, and especially horrible because they're using really nice actors who are much better in other shows, like the Morning Show, where the several guys from here are playing an amazing roles there. They're completely horrible here, but the TLDR, they're selling things on the moon, and obviously they probably have guessed by now there is nothing on the moon. They don't have property, they haven't built anything, they're just selling that shit and trying to convince everyone that there is a property on the moon. And
so they're not selling future, they're selling like not they're selling future constructions, they're selling something that doesn't exist.
Correct, yes. They started as selling future, obviously, and this is a world where this is theoretically possible. The humanity constantly flying on the moon, and there is a base there, and they actually have a project there, and you actually can buy the property on the moon, you can build something there, but in reality, they failed to do everything, and they're just selling bullshit that doesn't exist. yes, that is Hello Tomorrow. Okay, anything else from anyone before we jump to the main, one of the main topics tonight, but honestly, this also.
I think we can go with books on and on.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I can toss in one book as well.
Go for it.
Absolute horrible title, but pretty good content. The book is called I'll Teach You to Be Rich. It's in the show notes as well. The premise is that most people, majority of the people, do not have their finances figured out. And the book is really trying to help you figure out that like 80-20 rule. I think in the book, the author refers to it 85% rule. And it's really just trying to help you automate as much of your finances as possible and like get you off some of the bad banks that like are known to be bad for customers and stuff, and for you to figure out what is your rich life. Like it could be like some people it's like the American dream, buying a house, but then it's the like the author really challenges you to think, why do you want to buy a house? Because renting could be better in some circumstances. And then like figuring out what things make you happy, consciously spend where you do spend, but then like automate your savings. So it's really just about walking you through 6 weeks program. And the reason I found this book is the guy also has a show called I'll Teach You to Be Rich on Netflix. It's a decent time pass. So it was running on the background. So we decided to check out the book on like drives and stuff, and pretty reasonable. I did pick up a thing or two, but I would say definitely if you're a beginner and you're like thinking about getting control of your financial life, this is a great book to get started with.
When I've seen name, I thought like the book would be about how to write a book and sell 1 million copies and then get rich from it. But apparently it's more useful than that.
You know, what is that famous district in LA where rich people live? Beverly Hills, one of them. There used to be a quite popular saying in Ukraine that any book how to be productive or successful is a guy from Beverly Hills teaching the guy from Kyiv that he should go outside of his comfort zone to become successful. But to be fair, I do love books like that, so I will add it to my to read list. I love things like that. I'm all into investment. But now I would
also recommend the audiobook, Slava. If you are going to get something, the guy is also a podcaster, so the audiobook is super easy to listen to, like one of the easiest to listen to books. It's like guy is just in his podcast reading his book.
Oh, he's reading his own book?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, what is our problem? What is the problem? They also was narrated by Tim Urban himself. So yes, I love this tendency when the authors actually narrating their book. But I have to ask, Nishant, so what's your preference? Are you renting or buying? Which group are you in? Renters or buyers?
Buying to put it on rent.
That's the right answer.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, so let's jump to next topics. So the Buzzsprouts have released, we discussed this last time, they released the AI for building the narrative, for building the whatever. I don't remember. Co-host. Yes, co-host AI. So we last time discussed that they build the co-host AI. This piece of software is incredibly bad. I would not recommend it to anyone. I finally have tried it. I honestly, my plan was like that. I would try it, and then I would build my own pipeline that doing that shit, and I will just move to my pipeline. I tried it. It was so...
Can you explain for me and other people who have no idea what it is?
And this is because you skipped the last episode where they discuss this stuff. But yes, of course. So the TLDR, you uploading your episode to the Buzzsprout and then generate show notes, proposing 5 titles to you, proposing time sections of your podcast, proposing tags, social media posts. So everything for you, which is a really nice idea until you see how it works. It's horrible. It just generates too many unnecessary buzzwords for your episode. And like if I would be reading show notes that it generated, I would not be listening that specific show just because it's so high level, so buzzwordy that, you know, just losing any meaning. So in fact, after that, I used it. Unfortunately, I don't have the version that it generated. But then I completely redesigned pipeline, created on scratch. I started using Whisperer for converting podcasts to text, and then effectively a pipeline that generating show notes. And in doing so, I had to figure out how to apply MapReduce concept for generating show notes, because it turns out the text of the podcast is too big to feed to GPT. You cannot just feed the whole podcast to the GPT. So I have to implement this small library that I did. Let me quickly show it, which effectively takes the idea of the MapReduce, and I'm applying the concept, classical MapReduce concept, to the LLMs. You can specify LLM, you can specify text, you can specify the actual prompt, and what will do, it will do the classical MapReduce. It will chunk it, and for each chunk, it will send it to GPT and says, here is a chunk of the text, here is the end goal, and this is chunk number one. Can you summarize this chunk of the text with any information needed in the context of this goal? It will generate this chunk, and then you're doing reduces where you're taking chunks that are generating and then asking, okay, here is 2 chunks from part number one, part number two. Can you merge it and create the chunk with them? So it's first doing the mapping, then reducing, and in the end, it builds the final chunk that allows it to build the show notes from the bigger podcast that we have. It works actually. How, yeah.
How do you chunk it? Like, do you by paragraphs, by sentences, or just like randomly?
It's literally chunks on the size of the context. So right now it's even hardcoded somewhere in the code, where it's chunk with a size, I think, of 8,000 tokens, not the tokens, characters, various chunks. It's a small code and I already can find this hardcoded value. And the thing is that if you subtracting it, okay, split, here is a split. And if you subtracting it, it's dynamic. Okay, anyway, but to answer your question, so I literally splitting the whole string, but I doing overlap. So if you do overlap, you kind of, if you split in the middle of the sentence, you just need one chunk to go slightly further, another chunk to go slightly backwards, and then both of them will have split in the middle of the sentence, but at the same time, you end up with having full coverage, because it will be different sentence that got split, and it works amazingly well. In fact, there is only one feature that is missing here. I actually do not add right now on the reduce steps number of the chunk. So it's actually not capable to derive which part was in the beginning of the show, which part was in the end, because when it do reduction, it doesn't know if this chunk from the beginning or from the middle, from the end. So that was a miss. I need to implement that probably next weekend. But it's working surprisingly well. It's like literally classical MapReduce. And by the way, this MapReduce was written by Copilot. So to some extent, it's even AI that wrote that, not even me. But yes, that's a TLDR. So feel free to use, folks. It's very simple. It has pre-prompt for how to do map, how to do reduce, and yada, yada. And it's in Go. So yes, not in Python, because fuck you, that's why. That's the reason why not in Python. Anyway, sorry.
The tool I recently built to help me with ChatGPT, I have to write in a Python because libraries in Python, and I'm not very versed in Python, so I have to use ChatGPT to generate all the code, and then like copy paste errors and saying, hey, please fix it.
I picked Go because one of the teams in the org that I'm helping to support, they have an effort going that they have to implement in Go. So I kind of needed to make sure that if I need it there, I will know Go. So I end up writing several projects in Go. Now I more or less understand the language, but I did zero code reviews in Go for the team and I did zero feature implementation for the team. So it's to some extent was wasted effort. And if I knew that I would fail to help the team with a Go, I probably would do it in Python as well, because it's obviously reducing amount of people who would be using that, just because not many people using ChatGPT and the programming in Go. That's very weird niche. Anyway, that
just
was
So this is great what you did here. Just for the sake of comparison, I wonder if you should try Fathom to do the summary for one of your podcasts, so you can compare co-host Fathom and your own script, and we can see like for one of the podcasts, like what do you get?
How do you know that the person is working in a company that does have a budget? Because the person doesn't know that the tool has a price tag of please contact our sales department and we will be in touch with you. So I would love to use your suggestions, but I have no clue even how to install it. I literally tried, and you know, the only price I have is contact us. That's the price.
That's probably means like $1 million.
Yeah, I guess, yes. I don't know really how much. But yes, Nishant is right. I'm pretty sure that Fathom will do much better job. Like, I'm pretty sure it will do much better job. I just have no clue how to use it. Okay. Does anyone want to talk about anything else? Otherwise, I'll be keep chatting and keep moving forward with a full steam on other topics.
Let's move to next one.
My God, I was hoping someone will say something. Okay, let's go to the next one. One of the hobbies that I recently picked up is Hugs the Box. It's an extremely interesting service that if you are accustomed to things like LeetCode or HackerRank, this is a very similar thing, but for the security. The reason why I picked it up, it's mostly I do honestly believe that with the current development of AI, security will be the next frontier, just because of how everything is moving, where everything is moving. All the friends of mine who are in the security field telling that amount of the black swan events that can bring down the internet are exponentially growing. They used to have one per year, now they're having one per each second week where they need to do emergency patching, like on the magnitude that, oh, someone will figure out how to exploit this, we are all doomed, so to speak. So a lot of the stuff that security folks in the industry, especially the networking space, are telling, just emphasizing importance of that. We have a lot of people on the hacking side, and we have a lot of people on the AI side, but we almost have zero people who are on the both sides who can figure out how to apply AI to the low-level, true, real-world hacking problems. And, you know, it's not that far away the moment where these two fields will interchange. And I don't know what it will be, but probably the same magnitude of impact that we having with ChatGPT. So I just want to refresh my skills on some of the low-level networking security. And to do so, I found this Hack the Box thing.
How does it work? Do you get like a task to complete or how it works?
Actually, yes, it's literally exactly like that. You're researching the topic about scanning ports, scanning vulnerabilities, scanning networking, and then they spinning up VM machine that you have, quote unquote, to hack. And time to time, I'm spending days to figure out how to apply knowledge that I just figured out to hack that machine. And they do it in a clever way. They're trying to sell you a subscription, but it works in the way that they give you enough internal coins. I don't remember the name of those coins. So you can purchase the lesson. And then when you progress, if you're finishing the homework and if you will finish all the homework, they will give you barely enough credit to purchase the next course. But if you're even behind on one task...
Battle passes and games.
Exactly, yes, exactly like that, yes. It's reminding me exactly that. But it's clever and nice. I so far loved it. Have not skipped even one homework, not because I love all of them, but just because I didn't want to pay them. But, you know, eventually, maybe, one day. I don't know.
On this note, I actually, like, you know, a lot of people talk about AI in terms of like securities, and, you know, we can give you AI some source code for macOS and it will find vulnerabilities, which like 0 day, right?
Yep.
But I think there are another like area where AI can actually hurt us without going like to source code level. We accumulated huge amount of personal data everywhere, you know, like photos, geolocations, like our relations to other people, our behaviors. And right now, you know, like this, like when you say someone, hey, don't post your personal photos because people can attack you. And usually the response is, I'm not a superstar. I'm not a politician. No one cares about me. But with AI, like it's became much more cheaper to target usual people, like regular people. And I'm always like thinking about scenarios. What if found like all people who going to vacation next week, who has old parents in a different country, who has a particular bank account, and we also know like some personal info about them. And we have enough voice examples to make generated. Now we can make these attacks. Okay, call their parents, ask for money because we are in trouble during our, I don't know, sailing event or our vacation. And if you like just make it automatically scattered across world, like it can be actually like very impactful on people's lives without even like going to some 0 day hacking and things. What do you think?
Especially with the language modeling, I want to say to our listeners, I did it with my old folks, and I would highly encourage to do this well. Go and design the keyword, I don't know, sneakers or something, and tell your parents that if you're calling in your own voice, not from the phone number that you have, unless you will say that keyword, it's not you. This is a reality. If you're listening and thinking, that's a bullshit, that will not happen to me, Well, I would highly suggest reconsider. Go and develop a keyword and go and share it with your old folks, and that's the level of protection you have to do. There is no other way.
I would say going like every time maybe too much, but at least if there's a situation when someone asks money from you, just you need some confirmation.
100%. There have been cases of like people exactly like getting the voice modulation right and everything, and you have to have those keywords.
And especially,
Dimitri, your topic of bringing it to personal privacy things just reminded me of a study that just came out from the Mozilla group. Slava, I added a link to the show notes. They reviewed different car companies' privacy policies. And if you like scroll down a little bit, and there's like all sorts of ranking, and Tesla is the worst one. If you didn't know, they like track everything. But what no one expected, Nissan is the creepiest one. They claim right to your sexual activity. And Kia also mentions that they collect information about your sex life in their privacy policy. Oh, and six car companies say that they collect your genetic information or genetic characteristics.
How? Like, how?
So here's what I have to think. I'm fuzzy on details now because this happened a while ago. Because I signed up for some service, in the clause, it said, because you signed up for us, you are giving us permission to pull data from Verizon or T-Mobile. Like me signing up for service allowed them to ask Verizon for all the information. They had that contract, but I had to sign up for the service. So I wonder if there's more of these behind the scene contracts. As soon as you buy the car, you sign that contract, you now just said, yes, you are allowed to pull my information. So maybe they now can buy it from 23andMe and you cannot sue them for doing that because you said it's okay.
It could be like companies doing, it reminds me like story that pop ups a couple of years ago. So people analyzed a particular TV. I don't remember what brand it was, but it was pretty much no name brand, which is very cheap. It makes a shitty TV, but you know, like sometimes people just need whatever is showing a picture. The trick it was, they were selling this TV less than manufacturing price. And when they tried to dig why is this actually business, right? Apparently they got more money from advertising and selling like what you actually watching than from TV itself. It was a pretty interesting case as well.
I think it was from Durov or someone who did a Telegram, I think. But yes. I was trying to find a landing for one of the startups that I deeply involved. I honestly remember the name. I don't remember the landing page. But effectively, the whole idea that you would have a service that collects your data and then you selling it to anyone who wants to learn about you. So you're no longer giving it to anyone. And obviously, I don't believe that any of such startups will persevere to the level that they need to or want to. But the idea is nice that you willingly giving it to, like, we all give our password to 1Password, right? We're trusting that company. So imagine the company that we can trust with our personal data that will keep it secure. And we actually in control of giving access to this personal data. We can see the data exactly, and we can decide which part of the data will go to each company. And then you're walking to the target, and target tells you, oh, I will give you 25% discount. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then you need to also trust all these companies, right? Every time you sell to target, you expect them not to lose your data, the piece you gave them.
True, but now you're in control. You can decide not to. It's exactly, yeah. This is the point. You now have the control of your data, and this is a different story. If you don't trust, you don't have to sell. Today, they are buying our data from providers behind our back, and nothing we can do.
Yeah, that's true.
There is also a TV that literally comes with a second screen for ads, but you get the TV for free.
Like, okay, that's really like from Black Mirror show.
Tele, yes, that's the one that I was referring to. That's, I think, from the Telegram. Nope, I might be wrong. Yes, that's the one I was referring to. Yes. Oh man, that's hilarious. Yes.
Can I put just like a bottom advertising screen on my wall and then start earning money from it?
Without the TV, just
I'm watching it, right?
There is something to it, you know. There is something to it, like maybe an app for the iPad. The app, if you're opening that app, it will turn on the camera to watch you to make sure that it's actually in the living room, that people are actually passing by, and then it will start give you some money for any person that passed by. So it knows the camera is turned out, so it can use cyber vision to effectively figuring out that there are people passing by. It can show the ads on the main screen. So yeah, there is something to it that we can together collectively bring this humanity to the end much faster than we thought in the beginning of the show. We just need to brainstorm more. Anyway, there is several things else to discuss, but any other thing that someone have recalled before we jump to...
I can talk about games, but I see you put Starfield as well, so I think we can... It would be enough for one show.
To be fair, I have not played Starfield. I know it's out. I know that someone in my house is a special Starfield Constellation Edition. I know that, but I don't have it yet. But somewhere in my house, somewhere.
I can talk in spite of advertising a bit. On the PlayStation, there's a way to play trials for games, like, and it's time-based, like 1 hour, 5 hours, 30 minutes, depend on the game. And recently I started to play Fort Solis, which is, and it has like 1 hour demo. It's unconstrained, but you just have 1 hour. And the game essentially is walking simulator, you know, you just walk, do something. And game put in a genre of like UI technicon on a Mars station, there is no one, you know, like a bit spooky, but nothing really happening. And they did so good on timing. The first 1 hour, like you go from not spooky to almost spooky. And the last moment when I started to see something spooky, the game ended because like my 1 hour left. It's probably the best advertisement I ever get because they got me hooked in the exact moment. And now I'm considering to buy it, which is very, very smart decision. And I haven't seen it like before. It's really good timing they did.
But it's really hard to do because each player will unless
there is... Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's not, I mean, it's kind of linear because you walk like pretty much on corridors, like open doors, mm-hmm. but you still, you know, can stay, you can read something. I don't know how, maybe I just was lucky and like other people don't do it. I'm pretty sure you can just stay and don't get this effect. But for me, it works well. Maybe they just did a lot of play tests and see like, this is an average time when people get to this room.
Okay, does it come to Xbox? Exclusive. Sversona is going door to door offering blah, 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 blah. So does it or does it not? I don't have a lease for Xbox. I hate you. I hate you. Why are you doing this to me? You know that I have Xbox. You first saw the game I want to play and it doesn't exist on Xbox. Okay. So are you going to buy it or not?
Maybe, you know, like I'm in an age and a time where money is not constrained, but decision to spend time on the game is a constraint. So I will think about it.
Got it. Okay.
I think we yep. can all start advocating for that for the week that's happening in Europe. At least in some places, countries have started experimenting with that, so we can reclaim one day per week for gaming.
Tell me more. What is that? And Ishani, you are muted. You are muted, but I'm pretty sure you're telling something awesome.
Oh, yeah. So I'm using Push to Talk, and then I started searching on the side. I think it was either France or some Nordic country. They were experimenting with 4-day work weeks last year. And I think the results were promising, is what I remember reading. But if you don't find it now, I'll have it ready for the next podcast, and we can follow up on this.
Yeah, for the week.
I know Bernie Sanders right now is also advocating for that.
Who?
Bernie Sanders.
Oh, Bernie Sanders. Oh, that socialist guy. Okay. Yes, sure. Yes, I see. In his age, even if US will go under, he probably will not survive till that moment. But I know. You know who else went to 4 days week? That was the green up for the note taking, with elephant as a main symbol. I'm pretty sure you Evernote. Yes, Evernote was a famous company that went to 4 days week, four days working week. Are they still around? I think they went under. I think they
maybe
sold to someone.
Some people just can't migrate from it and they stuck.
Maybe, yes. But to be fair, I don't mind, of course. I don't mind unless it's my startup. Then I do mind, and my startup, no. I'm advocating to go to six days per week as a working norm. But yes, that's a different story.
You will have to move your business to China for that.
I mean, the whole premise is that people are more productive over 4 days than 6 days. I guess over long periods of time, that's true. In a short time, you can do.
I think the main issue is, like, if government enforces it, it's not making people more productive, because it goes, like, across all, like, if work is, you know, moving something from left to right, you probably will be more productive. Like, you will do more in more days, right? Depending on the job.
Yeah, for sure. If it's like physical labor thing, yeah, I cannot do 6 days of labor in 4 days. If it's thinking jobs and creativeness, maybe. I don't have strong opinions.
One extra day we'll spend playing games. It's actually an interesting topic, because I think, like, 4 days a week, it will come eventually, but not because people care about productivity. Just, like, we have so many people and we automate so many things. So we just need to keep people somehow busy, but we don't have job enough for everyone, unless we start building pyramids or something, or go to Mars, which is another pyramid.
You know, even though it's the people are more productive, you can fix it by the other way. You can have more people. If you have a bigger amount of people pool, that's different things. And that reminds me about Culture 996. That's the resilient website and GitHub repo. So this is quite popular in the China. So that's why the Chinese folks created the huge project 996 ICU with a list of companies that support this. So 996 is you working from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. 6 days a week. So that's what it means, Culture 996. And obviously this was leading cause to many deaths in China, where this is actually actively employed, because especially if you're doing creative job and you've been forced to keep doing creating job 9 to 9 without the weekends, yes, it can lead to a lot of complications to your psychological life.
My grandma told me, like, after war in, like, second world war, in the Soviet Union, there was, like, a lot of, you know, destructions and a lot of, like, factories closed, and they need to rebuild everything, and they have working Saturdays, but not every working Saturday. I think it was, like, once per month, and people call it Black Saturday, because it's, like, a 6 days, and for people it was, like, kind of norm, because they understand what they're doing, but it was still, like, extra day, time to time.
When you... Nishan, go for it. I saw you muted yourself. Go for it.
Oh, I was going to just link it to something else. So if you want to finish first.
I wanted to say something, but already forgot. So you go.
I saw a video, I think, that came out of Japan, where the office had, like, really nice setups for, like, you could sleep and everything, and everyone was going, oh, that's so sweet for the employer. But then, like, then someone was like, actually, if you're spending 72 hours or 80 hours a week, that becomes more of a necessity than, like, a perk that the employer is providing if you're literally just spending your life in the office. So that's kind of what 996 reminds me of.
Yeah, that reminds me now when you said this, when I used to work, used to be working one big company from the South Korea. I've spent tons of the time in South Korea, and then they used to have a dormitory right next to the office, so you can go there and sleep. You have to pay for it something, and that was horrible. Like, it was really, really horrible.
It was work from home.
What do you think about Twitter offices opening like semi-hotel in the building itself? You don't even have to go to the building next door.
It's remember the stories like people from Google sleep in a van on a parking lot so they don't need to pay as a friend.
You know, that story, by the way, is true, but this is for old Google, and it got famous back in the day, but now people telling in the context that they don't want to pay rent. In reality, when that was actually extremely popular, that was a time when you can leave an RV for 2 years and buy a house, even if you're like a junior in Google. So a lot of junior middle engineers were doing so. There was like internal forum where you can ask where to park your RV, where the security is not often comes around. You just need to survive 2 years and you can buy a house in cash. Obviously, the time long gone, no one doing it anymore, but the story is still there with us. But yes, it used to be true.
It reminds me, I was working in a startup in Moscow. And I was living outside, and my commute was like more than 1 hour. And sometimes if after office I go like, you know, to the bar or somewhere to spend time, it's like super late and I'm too lazy to go for commute. So I went to office, like no one is there, so I can sleep there. And at morning I'm already on the work.
Such an amazing story. yeah, sorry, I was updating the show notes. Okay, I do have just one more thing that would more or less be enough for the final accord of the evening, but does anyone else want to share anything before I will jump to the movies section?
Well, let me say one last thing about games then on what happened last week. There was an article that came out that Rockstar Games, which is a pretty big studio in gaming, found to be selling pirated games on Steam. to get around their own DRM. in comments in various places, I think I read one of them, the person was talking about they reading out to the company about like getting an installer for a game, but the game was old, so the company was like, just go get the pirated version, we don't have the files anymore. But this is pretty crazy that you go on Steam, you think, you know, you're buying the real game, and the company's just selling you a pirated version.
Oh my god, this is hilarious. That reminds me, Dima, I think you 100% would remember, there was a game from which they lost all the source code.
Oh, it was Heroes of Might and Magic 3.
Right, right.
Because I remember they actually, like, they made version for iPad. I was very happy about that. And then after some time, I upgraded iOS version and says, like, there's no, you can't really play this game because no. And when I start digging, I found that they completely lost all sources, so they couldn't really adapt for new version of iPad OS. I think it was that one.
Yes, expansion packs were not included because the source code for those releases were lost. Jesus, how they managed to do so. Oh my god, oh my god. I'm pretty sure someone right now rewriting the source code from scratch together with OpenAPI. Here is a screenshot of my game. Can you write, please, a Unity code for that screenshot and then doing it from scratch? I'm pretty sure someone somewhere doing so.
It's actually an interesting idea, right? Like, what if you give AI a game, you know, just like controls and say, okay, play until you understand how it works so you can write code for me.
Yes. And then, okay, now make it not safe for work as much as you can. Let's see how it will look like. Okay. For those type of topics, let's go to the movies section. And Let me just share several things that are old, but I still would like to share them. First is Ted Lasso. If you have not watched Ted Lasso, I would highly recommend you to do so, but you have to promise to me that you will stop in the season one. It's unbearable to say how shitty the season two and three comparing to season one. Yes, usually the TV series, when you're probably hearing this, you'll be saying, yeah, I know that season two is always a little bit worse than season one. Like, no, that's a different movie. it's just unbearable to watch. I don't know how they managed to do so.
Yeah, I remember you told me, because when I finished first one, I was like, yeah, it's a good ending. I'm not going to watch it.
Kudos to you, my friend. You did the right thing. Nishant?
I mean, I have seen all three seasons. I think they picked it up in season three. I really did enjoy season three. So there was at least, some comeback there.
There are episodes that are amazing in season two and season three that by themselves is a really nice standalone movie that you can watch. And to be fair, if you would start with season two without any prior expectations, that is a decent series by itself. But this is a problem, they're comparing with season one constantly. Dima, it felt like you were about to say something.
Oh, no, I just unmuted myself. I didn't.
Okay, so who is watched recently anything new and interesting? Otherwise, I will just keep going with what I have watched recently.
I put One Piece there. Nishan, do you want to talk about something?
Sure, I'll go. I just finished watching the After Party season two. If you have not seen the After Party, it is a pretty good show. If you are especially into murder mysteries, so there is a murder, and then they have a pretty interesting way of walking you through each person's story. So the premise is that this police officer really likes to listen to everyone's story because they are the main character. So you basically get to see a movie each time, and then in the end, they put everything together and solve the murder. But every episode, especially in season two, was done with a 50s themed. So it's everyone has dramatic takes on this is what was going on. And it was pretty, some inspirations from Agatha Christie kind of whodunit stuff. But it was a really good season.
But if it's a murder mystery, is there a cliffhanger in the end of the first? Or who is a...
They solved the murder in season one. There is a different murder in season two, and they solved that too.
So they're disconnected, right?
Same cast, actually. Okay. So I'm not gonna say more than that.
Okay. It reminds me I forgot the name of the movie, but anyway, I may be able to recall. I think, Dima, you also wanted to share something about the movies before I will share some impression about Oppenheimer.
Oh, no, you already watched it. Yeah. So I watched One Piece, couple of episodes on Netflix, just for the context. One Piece is a Japanese manga, which really long, and also Japanese anime, which started in 1999 and still going. It's too long. I never actually watched it because, again, I don't have that time in my life to watch all of it. And the thing about animes, usually when it goes to live, it's very shitty. I can't recall any anime that was adapted as a live show and became decent. They all very bad. I think one decent example was Ghost in the Shell, which was pretty much just converted to Western action movie. But this is very surprisingly nicely adapted. It still has all this craziness from anime, that would you expect. But for some reason, it's nice to watch. Decent actors, decent setting, and it doesn't try to be serious. It's pretty much if we get anime with all this crazy stuff going on and segregation of everything and put in a live show, and it looks fine. I really like it, and I can recommend if you want something a pretty, crazy adventures of pirates. That's That's the premise.
Got it. Probably I added on my side to watch list for me. Probably will watch eventually. Thank you. And I, in the end, do want to share my impressions from the Oppenheimer 50mm film. Oh, 70, not the 50, 70. Yes.
Oh, where did you watch it? In Dublin or in San Francisco?
In Dublin, yes. There are like only 12 cinemas in the North America that can show you the proper Oppenheimer in 70mm. You know, by the way, I've seen different viewpoints. Some of the folks would tell you that you don't have to go to there, and it's not actually warrant. For me, I definitely would suggest to go and watch specifically 70mm. So what the 70mm IMAX that support that can give you, it's actually will give you a huge IMAX screen that can show you the picture and the size of the square, not the literally square when X is equal to Y. And what they're doing in Oppenheimer, they're showing you three different versions of the picture. They're showing you the grayscale version, which is effectively when they show you grayscale, they show you the historical events and they unfold it in real life. Then they're showing you the color movie in their usual ratio, not the square, but usual movie ratio on the screen. That would be the classical movie. And periodically, they're going to the square movie, but the square, not in the usual cinema, the square would be trimmed from the size to show you a square. In this case, it's actually when they're showing normal movie, it's trimmed on the top and the bottom because the IMAX at capable of 70mm have a huge square in front of you. So when they're going to the third movie, the third mode, so to speak, you suddenly see much bigger screen than you would see in the movie usually. And that creates a wow effect. And even more, it creates a continuous and wow effect and again, 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 because they're only going to the third mode periodically. So imagine that they're showing you a movie and suddenly they want to show you a close-up face. So for that face, for the facial expression, they might go to a square when you have a much bigger ability to zoom in. Because if you're zooming in on the classical ratio of the cinema on someone's face still in the middle, you have tons of the screen useless. In this case, they can zoom in and show you a face much bigger. And each time when they're showing either face or something, they put additional emphasis and it's just amazing. And again, because they're going back and forth and not constantly in this mode, it's created this wow effect again and again and again because it hits right when you forgot that they're even capable of showing you this. And again, you're seeing it. It's like, oh my God, yes, that's so cool.
So you did like visuals. What about like a story, plot, actors, everything else? Is it there? Or you're just like so good on visuals that you don't care about other parts?
No, so it's an amazing movie. They're still there. It is an amazing movie. I knew a lot of the story of the Oppenheimer, and because they're trying to tell the story to some extent close to the real story, it was just fine. And use the story, so to speak. I knew how the bomb made, how it looks like, what was the sequence of event, how they derived it. So from that perspective, sure, you know the story. They're uncovering you a lot of underground parts that shaped the story, so to speak. There was one particular moment. It's probably not going to be a big spoiler. It's probably not a spoiler at all. But there was a... Actually, no, I'm not going to tell you. You have to go and watch it. I don't want to spoil it. But yes, I love the dialogue.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
What?
Thank you. I appreciate not spoiling the movie.
Here you go. But it was extremely hard to find the tickets. So we literally were monitoring tickets. It was all sold out for 70mm constantly until one morning, early morning, we were going with several friends to somewhere. I don't remember where we were going. I just casually opened the cinema and we see, oh, there is a 4 tickets 20 minutes from now, in the moment where we're leaving to go there, someone returned it. We're like, oh, nope, we're going, we have to go there. Like 20 minutes is enough to drive there. We came there 5 minutes late. Because of 70mm, they don't have almost any pre-screen because none of the advertisement are fitting that screen. So they're literally starting the movie at the hour. So we arrived 5 minutes late expecting that the movie would start 15 minutes late. And we walked into the theater in the middle of the movie because it already was airing. That was way itself a surprise. So that was a TLDR. Highly recommend. Anyway, I actually think we are precisely at 1 hour, but if someone has anything else to share, please do. Now is the time. Now is the time.
I think we're good for today.
Okay, so let me move everything to the backlog of the topics. And with that, thank you, folks, and we'll chat and see all of you in the same place, same time next week. And you folks can say goodbyes.
Goodbye.
Have a nice weekend, everyone. Bye.
See you.